including other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three. Coming up on about 10 into the hour, and Andy Serling joining us. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Good. It's been a very Naira-centric hour because had Glenn Kozak to talk about the construction projects.
Was he on a tractor while he was speaking to you?
He was. He was doing. He was sealing the Oklahoma court. No, he may have been either on his way or coming back from Laurel, where he saved the day for the MJC too.
Glenn is God's gift to horse racing.
Unbelievable! It is unbelievable. You know what he mentioned that I did not realize, and I am curious about your thoughts.
A lot of things you didn't realize.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did. He said that one of the pioneers of and one of the people that really championed this reopening of the Wilson Chute was Bruce Johnstone.
That's correct. Shocked you didn't know that.
No, I am. I
didn't know that.
Well, whenever I tried to get I tried to get Bruce repeatedly, and he would say yes, and then when I would go to pin him down for a visit, he would beg off.
Maybe he didn't like you.
That's what it was. That's probably what you're right. I hadn't considered that.
Face, you know?
But it might have come up if I could have gotten Bruce on.
It might have. It might not have. There's plenty of interesting things to have talked to Bruce Johnstone about than that.
Well, his training career, and then his the work that he had been doing as a horseman's liaison.
A lot of things to have talked to Bruce about.
Yeah. Nah, he always.
So he's one of the really, 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 really good guys.
He would just shut. He would. I don't know. He would. And it's funny with that deep baritone voice, he would have been a great radio guest, but he just was so, he would beg off about visiting.
Maybe he didn't like you.
What is your reaction to this, Andy, to adding?
My reaction to it? My reaction to it is I just am totally enjoying all of the reactions to it.
I hear you. I know exactly what you mean.
I was there in 92, and it wasn't overly well received in 92, but I think Glenn plans to set it up differently, right, in 92.
Yes.
There's a good article by T.D. Thornton about it in Thoroughbred Daily News today, yesterday, today, whatever. It wasn't really a shoot to put it in the same way, and I think, I'm sure Glenn has other ideas, and I don't know, I'm not anti-change, ideas are ideas, so hopefully it'll work out well. I don't know, I'm really getting better with the doubt. If Glenn wants to do it, that's good enough for me. I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. It's not.
It's just
things. It makes it, gives me more to talk about.
Well, one of the things that Glenn mentioned, and that people that I haven't seen as many people, they've been discussing, the way in which post positions could be affected and that stuff. But the part that Glenn brought up, and actually Pat Kelly came on too, and Pat had texted me this as well, the benefit of the configuration when some races come off the turf, and that not forcing horses to go a mile and an eighth that had been scheduled to go.
Well, there's a solution to that. It doesn't require a chute. That all races mile and a sixteenth or less of 7 furlongs. So even for older horses, I mean,
interesting.
You know,
interesting.
I mean, I'm not saying that. You know, that to me, that's an aside conversation. I mean, to me, I've never understood why there wasn't a conversation when a race was drawn, where people said, you know, what's the general feeling? You know, we really talked to the trainers about it.
Huh.
They like the 16th older horses races to go to mile and eighth. I don't really care that much, but it doesn't feel like we've ever had as much conversation about it as we could have. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. In fact, when you bring that up, I don't ever remember that being, you know, kicked around.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not, once again, you know, I'm not.
Hmm.
I don't know, just that's all good and fine. But, I mean, and the reality, you know, is that if people perceive that there's some issue with the mile shoot, it does not necessarily make it better if they go to that distance. So I'm going to trust in Glenn and assume that if Glenn is going to do it, that Glenn will do it right. So I don't really have a problem with that, you know. Listen, we run mile and 16th races on the inner turf at Belmont, and they're considerably more ridiculous than this could possibly be. I happen to like those races, though I think, you know, hopefully we'll get away from ever running any stake races at that distance again. To me, that's just negligence. But, you know, I mean, those races, why are, you know, those races are a similar concept, but even more problematic, right?
Hmm. Well, it's going to be ready for this season. So
glad we get that tractor up there soon. It'll be driving up the Northway soon.
Yes. Well, he said that they would have already started on certain work, including, you know, dealing with the fences with the rails. He said, but it's been so, you know, it's been pretty nasty up here for 10 days, and so he said they haven't started anything. He said, but they're poised to get going.
Oh, I'm sure Glenn can't wait to get going. Kidding me? As soon as he fixes his mouth.
Let me get a couple of notes in before we circle back to the weekend in New York. And you had reached out to me about the Pedigree price play that came out Saturday.
We're not doing Redboard Hour on the Steve Fick Show. I'm not participating in Redboard Hour. Use your other guests for Redboard Hours.
How is it Redboard?
Because the race is over.
No, there's a sidebar to the topic, which I didn't, when you first mentioned it to me on Saturday night, that I hadn't realized until I then got a chance to go and look at it later. And that is, you know, that this was the horse that Mill Ridge, that Doc Chandler and the Bells named in honor of Alice Chandler, Mom's Moon. And when I went to look at the result, and I realized that this was the horse that you had mentioned, it's got a really nice, you know, backstory. That's all.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't understand why that was a particularly funny race. I mean, I think one of the for me at least, the unfortunate things about the current situation at Gulfstream with the inundation of synthetic races and the general lack of turf races, and to be fair, they've also had some rain down there, but, you know, obviously because of the synthetic course, they can't run even as many races on the turf, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, and this is selfishly, the only races I had any interest in there, really pretty much over the last, I would say, 15 years, 10 years at least, were maiden races, maiden special races for the turf, which they ran a fair abundance of. And now they're not running that many. One of the reasons I like them, that times I've gotten, you know, priced horses with Pedigree. Times I've gotten long period of time betting Pedigree horses that none of them win, but they can win at prices. And that Saturday race was a particularly interesting race because there was a clear cut horse who was likely to be favored, I think the horse ran around 2-1, that, you know, no sane person was betting on, which was Todd Fletcher having that Dame Dorothy first-time starter half to Spice is Nice debuting on the turf. Todd is not debuting a horse like that with that pedigree on the turf, and in all likelihood, unless the horse just can't run, because that's a dirt pedigree. So you have that horse starting it off, and, you know, I mean, I didn't see it myself, because I'm really not paying attention to their races, but a couple of smart friends of mine texted me and said, so look at the last race in Gulfstream, there's, you know, on Saturday, there's going to be a favorite in there, which, you know, we want to bet against. And I said, I looked, and I thought, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And there was actually a decent number of horses with some pedigrees in there, but, I mean, obviously, to have to analyze it on the outside, A Kitten's Joy, and they gave the horse one race on synthetic, and that's the kind of horse I love to bet on. No, a bad race on synthetic, going to the right surface, since I don't believe that synthetic and turf are the same surface. It's just an automatic horse to bet a few dollars on. And, you know, in this case, fortunately, the horse won and paid $87. And it's sort of amazing that a horse could have that kind of pedigree and nobody was aware of it. I saw none of the handicappers down there brought it up either. And those kind of horses, but, I mean, you do the pedigree work, you got to use that horse in some respect, right?
No doubt. And then what I brought up with it was Rusty Arnold's numbers with second-time starters.
Yeah, you know, he's certainly been known to have horses improve second time out. Second on playoffs. Yeah, no, I mean, that was obviously well met. They went right to the lead with it. I agree. I was curious about the Dame Dorothy, the horse in the rail, because that was a Stone Street and partnership with Winchell. I didn't know if anyone else was involved, but give you a Todd Fletcher. I guess they did because, you know, he trained the dam and he trained the half sister.
Right. Principe Doro.
But given that pedigree to be running on the turf, it was hard to imagine that was a good sign.
Ended up ninth. Yeah, beaten about six.
Pedigree horses requires the stomach to bet a lot of horses that run 10 at 30-1. So after race, I can't believe I wasted money on that horse. Over time, you make money on those horses. You just have to be willing to bet a lot of horses that run like crap. But we all bet on horses that run like crap, so why differentiate?
Fair enough. You know what also was notable in this field? The horse that finished sixth, Last Dawn, this may be, if not the last, it certainly is one of the last runners that is going to be wearing the red and gold of Samson Farm. Gail Cox trains. And the horse did not run terrible. This is a Violence. It's a homebred by Samson that they did not sell last year in the dispersal, which is notable. So it's a Violence colt. And we'll keep an eye on that one for the Sam Wells. And Last Dawn. I'm glad I noticed that.
So am I.
And for those that didn't hear it in hour one, Rusty Arnold now is hitting at 26% with his second outs, and the ROI is up to $7.28.
Well, the $8 horses tends to blow your ROI.
Well, he went into the race with an ROI of 4.51. So he was averaging $18.70 with those second out winners. 7 for 29, now 8 for 30. Pretty gaudy.
Right.
Andy,
get rich. Yeah.
What about what did you make of Olympiad's performance on Saturday?
I didn't. I don't watch the races, so I don't know. He got a big figure. He's good. I mean, he ran very well in the Cigar Mile, right? Was he third or fourth?
Yeah.
Thought he ran really well. Thought he ran better than his finish in there. But he has a good horse. I thought he was one of the fourth round of invitees to the race formerly known as the Don. They're not going to bring him back in 2 weeks to face Life is Good, are they?
I wouldn't think so.
Not a real Bill Mott-like move. I guess I'm going to be wrong. I guess Nick Scowers is going to run against him. Though I'm still waiting for that. Like his last work.
Well, because you said that you'd be surprised at the time if it was going to happen.
I'm going to be wrong about that. I really did not think they would take him on.
On that topic too.
Life is Good is kryptonite for that one. They might be kryptonite for each other, but he's definitely kryptonite for him.
Well, it'll be interesting. What? Speaking of which, any finalist thoughts on Eclipse on the Eclipse front?
No. Should I have some?
I don't know. I just was curious because we hadn't talked about it.
Did anyone not get nominated? That should have. Search results should have been over Clarier.
I agree with.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter because Malifaux's going to win anyway, and deservedly so. No, I don't. I don't know. I mean, I know that. They should clean up the voting human categories. But I said everything. I think a lot of people were surprised that IRAD was a finalist for the Eclipse for Jockey, right?
A little bit. I left him off my ballot.
He could have made cases for his brother. Could have made a case for Luis Saez.
Yep.
You know? So I was surprised by that.
Yep. Me too.
I mean, Joel's going to win anyway, so.
Correct.
Well, which is good. She deserves it. Deserved last year. I don't really care. It doesn't really matter. I mean, who's going to win Sprinter?
I think Jackie's Warrior, but.
Flightline should be the finalist.
I agree.
But, listen, at least Golden Pal wasn't, so there's that. He's a ridiculous choice. I give it Jackie Warrior. I think, though, you know, I can understand that, you know, they should have run him the Bosberg instead of the Gallant Bob. They should have run him in that race against older horses. You know, they had their opportunity, and they did put their eggs in the basket against older horses in Breeders' Cup, and he failed badly. Now, I'm a Jackie's Warrior fan, so it's not like and I think he deserves it off his body of work, but I can understand some people who are going to say he didn't beat older horses, and I don't think that's totally unfair. I don't agree with it. I would give it to him, but I don't think that's a totally unfair barometer. Problem is, it's a flawed group, you know? I mean, Aloha West shouldn't get third year because he won the Breeders' Cup. I think he's a cool horse, but, you know.
See, I agree, and you know, last year the Whitmore Vekoma situation, it almost felt like voting for Whitmore last year was a sort of a career
honor.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
I would have voted for Vekoma, but you know he was imperfect as well. I mean, he didn't run again after Met. Did he ever run again?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think he never ran again. Yeah, I mean, obviously he had issues and wasn't they didn't want to run him, but regardless, you know, he did, you know, he did win the Carter, he did win the Met. And Whitmore certainly failed more often than he succeeded. But I think that was a career. I think if Whitmore wasn't Whitmore, he wouldn't have won.
Agreed. And that's, although,
I don't agree with that kind of sentiment, but I can understand it. A little bit, and you know, he was a pretty cool horse. So, but I mean, he also didn't even win the races at home. Well, that was last year. So that was 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, right. It's exactly, exactly.
But you know, you could at least he was a palatable career, or you know, I mean, it wasn't right that Zenyatta got Horse of the Year over Blame, obviously. You know, and they did it because of her career and her popularity. But she shouldn't have gotten over Blame. There was no reasonable argument that she should have gotten over him. She, too, put her eggs in the basket of Breeders' Cup Classic, and he beat her fair and square. He ran the better race. So, you know, and regardless, he beat her fair and square, even if you don't agree with that. And I know there are people that don't agree with that. I don't agree with them, but that's fine. That was a flawed popularity contest. To me, Blame is Horse of the Year. They can call her Horse of the Year they want. She wasn't.
I'm going to float one by you too. I suppose I should be pleased that there's that voting has moved in this direction, because I advocated it going back several seasons. But here's Pizza Bianca being one of the 3 2-year-old finalists, and Modern Games one of the 2-year-old male finalists. Going back to Lady Eli, I voted for Lady Eli, and she didn't even make the finalists that year. That goes back to...
going to have Breeders' Cup 2-year-old turf races, we should certainly recognize them, especially in years when they're uttered even... I mean, my God, who would you even imagine besides Echo Zulu? In the dirt, I mean, it's a shambles behind her. Right? Who was the other nominee?
In the two year old filly, Juju's Map.
Yeah. Well, that's preposterous, right? But I guess she won sort of the only grade one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'd have given it the worst that won the Star. Was the Starlet still a grade one? She got like a
Starlet. Starlet is still a grade one, yeah.
Maybe she could have dueled Juju's Map. But Echo Zulu's going to win. I mean, I don't. Until one of these turf horses wins, and I guess they'll win when it's a super flawed year. I mean, who was the champion when Newspaper was nominated? That Jaywalk year?
That's what, 3 years ago? That would be Jaywalk, yes.
Yeah. Well, she had one of the presented for your stuff, so that was fair.
Well, to give you an example, the one that always bothered me was Lady Eli, because Take Charge Brandy with her lightning in a bottle at the end of the season.
Right.
She ends up winning, and then the next year, I voted for Lady Eli as 3-year-old, and I'm a chatterbox. Stellar Wind and Found were the finalists. Lady Eli wasn't even a finalist that year.
Well, Lady Eli, I mean, there was a reason for it. She only ran 3 times.
Well, but that, since when is that not, you know, that, we, you and I actually had this discussion about domestic, right?
I'm just saying, I'm a chatterbox was a, you know, she got put up in the CCA Oaks, and that was a pretty flawed year. She should have been nominated. She wasn't even nominated?
Nope.
Stellar Wind, and who was the other one?
Found.
Oh, well, Found on the Breeders' Cup Turf.
Yeah.
Stellar Wind, unfortunately, didn't win the distaff. I bet her.
So did
I. Stellar Wind.
No, so do I. So did I. I didn't realize she was that long ago, actually.
It was 15, right? Well, I found one. It was the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a chatterbox, was 3-year-old champion?
Yes, she was.
What did she win?
Win
the Oaks?
I think she may have. Larry, let me. That's a great question. You want to talk about a forgotten?
What?
Hold on. I completely cannot. I have no recollection of her season. It's kind of crazy.
It's shameful.
Is shameful. I'm embarrassed. She won. The Rachel, she won the Fairground Oaks. She won. She was third in the Kentucky Oaks. She won the Cotillion.
Who won the Kentucky Oaks?
This is 15.
She
Oh, Larry won it anyway. Lovely Maria.
Oh, God, that was awful.
That was with Boo Boo Clark.
That was what?
Boo Boo Clark.
I don't know what we're talking about.
The jock, Kerwin Clark.
Boo Boo. Steve, I don't know nicknames, so I know you love nicknames, but I'm not a nickname.
It's really not a nickname. It's what every
parents named him Boo Boo.
I would say about 8 minutes after he was born, they said Boo Boo because Kerwin, you know, just doesn't. You know.
That's his gift to his birth certificate that says Boo Boo.
She.
He was a great fraternity guy. He could have nailed the nicknames for guys.
What's my Delta Chi name? Dorfman, you know, I've given this a lot of thought.
Do you know where Tom Holtz's character's name came from?
Which one? Which character?
Tom Holtz in Animal House. I'm assuming.
Pinto, you mean?
Yeah, you know where it came from?
No.
There was a National Lampoon article, I think a couple years earlier, called Pinto's First Lay. Guys from Dartmouth, I believe, going to like Skidmore or something. The Meet Girls for Pinto.
There you go.
I'm assuming that's where the article, where it came from, especially.
That's great. Well, the late Doug Kenny.
Well, also the late Harold Ramis.
And the late Harold Ramis.
With Doug Kenny?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think he went. I don't think Ramis was. No, he was not with him at because it's the decals.
Harold Ramis wrote Animal House with Doug Kenny. Okay,
right, but they were not. They were not at Dartmouth together.
Well, Doug Kenny was at Harvard, so he definitely wasn't at Dartmouth.
Well, it's about. So who was it that? It's about the decals at. It's based on the decals at Dartmouth.
At Dartmouth.
Yes.
I'm aware of that. Who was at Dartmouth? I don't know. It may be, you know, maybe it was more of them just knowing about it. I don't know.
Yeah. That's so great.
Ramis wrote all those movies. It's unbelievable, the movies he wrote. It really is unbelievable.
It's a tragedy losing him.
Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes, Ghostbusters movies, Back to School. Caddyshack, obviously Caddyshack. Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day is the best, the best, the best. It's coming up.
Anything else? We done?
No, we're not. We're not done. I got a round around to the carryover sequence from Sunday.
What about it?
It was straightforward but tricky.
Okay. Good thing I'm staying on for this.
Well, the maiden race that started it off, and I understand the Roddy Valenti homebred with Charlie Baker. And certainly ran really well. The race that was a little challenging was that 40 claimer, the mile, Purple Hearted. You know, there were really four or five horses that on paper seemed to, you know, capable of winning, and Purple Hearted just blew the thing apart.
Well, it was a huge gold rail. I mean, it was a big gold rail. Sunday, so it's why there were a lot of exaggerated performances. That's why, what do you think, ran a 104 buyer? You know, that's one of the reasons Roddy's horse looked as good as it did, with all due respect.
Right.
One of the reasons that Purple Hearted looked good. Big gold rail. I mean, so, you know, we've had issues with the racetrack, more than normal. And Sunday developed into a big gold rail. Sort of didn't, I didn't see it right away. Friend of mine, in fact, pointed out to me, and I was a little hesitant, and he was right. But I think the rail had a lot to do with these, you know. And when you start seeing these exaggerated performances, you know, Rise was at a 71 first fire. Purple Heart got an 89 fire. I mean, come on, you know.
Wow.
Of course, he's barely capable of running 70s. What do you think Now, got a 104. Just got beaten 9 lengths by Happy Medium. Is he a 120 buyer or worse? You know? And Playwright, I know that race collapsed where Speeds couldn't win there. But, you know, if Trevor pays attention, Trevor was on the rail every step of the way until, you know, they angled out into the stretch. He stayed inside as long as he could. Look at the last race winner battling back inside. That was his dead top of the stretch.
Yep.
First winner stayed inside, made an inside move, beat another horse who was inside. Second winner on the rail. Second place finisher on the rail. Outside ralliers not getting momentum, you know.
Well, McCarthy, that's what makes Playwright's rally impressive. And
well,
McCarthy,
as I said, if you were listening, I'm sure you probably got another call or something. Playwright was on the rail until the stretch.
Right, and, until he came out.
And that
I got
fell
it.
Apart. The Speeds had no chance in there. So what did Trevor do? He stayed on the rail as long as he could. And Trevor,
yep,
one of the few riders that won with closers during the time the speed was so good, but the rail was very strong because he stayed on the rail as long as he possibly could.
No, and it's nice, it's nice to be able to acknowledge a rider doing that, because so often the inverse is true so often that nobody recognized it, and to see him take advantage of that and win those four in a row, it says a lot about him.
Trevor's a terrific rider.
He's been a nice addition. And on a similar note, in terms of a rider that's got a reputation for savvy, we had John Ortiz yesterday, and he wrote me a really nice note talking about Ray Lou Gutierrez and how impressed he is with him.
Is he still pretending he went to college, Ray Lou?
He is. Definitely. why you got to be like that? What's amazing about Gutierrez, he's essentially riding at two racetracks. It's unbelievable. He's on the leaderboard at Fairgrounds and Oaklawn.
Did he? Oh, that's
yeah. Cool. Yeah. No, he's tearing it up. Every time you look up, he's
a good guy. I like seeing him do well. Just gonna clear up that college thing.
The best. All right.
Don't you have some of the guests coming?
I don't know if I've got for the last segment. I don't know if I have anybody for the last segment. Actually,
that's bad for you. I'm gonna go.
All right. What do we look like for this week, racing-wise? I haven't looked ahead yet.
They're like mini Breeders Cup cards, both Thursday and Friday.
Andy, amazing. I appreciate it.
Oh, can we discuss concert tour for a second, since you have time?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm not a concert tour fan. I never was. But I don't understand. Now, listen, maybe something went wrong physically, you know, because he ran so badly Saturday. And he has clearly demonstrated that whatever chance he has to win a race going long is doing it on the front end. And the problem is he's not fast like Nick's Go, you know? So you can't just manufacture these horses to be fast overnight. So he's not that kind of horse. The one race that he won rating was the San Vicente. He stopped the pace 7 furlongs. If they're going to continue with him this year, shouldn't they bring him to New York and try him to Tom Poole to see if he can win that race 7 furlongs? And if he wins it and runs well, take a shot in the Carter?
That you always...
Not fast enough to win those 6 furlong races at Oaklawn. But maybe at 7 furlongs, the paces aren't as fast. You can get the right position. Does that make a certain amount of sense?
It absolutely does.
You could say, you know, it's sort of pushing the home team in New York, but I'm also think I'm pointing out would make sense for that horse.
I like it. I like it. I would imagine.
I feel like, why are they pushing forward with this horse as a rattler? Why don't they consider the possibility as a 7 furlong horse? And listen, you know, New York Stock, Humble, Carter, the Nayrud, the Forego, you know, we have a plethora of those races. And maybe he's just not very good and he wouldn't be competitive in any of them anyway. But looking at him, it feels to me like if he's going to have success going forward, those are probably the more likely races for him, one-turn races like that. Brad could say he's the opposite of Nick Scully, both in talent and the fact that he's not a one-turn, he's not a two-turn horse. I know he won the Rebel, but he did it under extremely favorable circumstances. Now, listen, maybe he just doesn't have any run in him anymore, you know, so it wouldn't matter what race you ran. But I'm not sure why you continue to try to run him long.
That's interesting, and he'll certainly trust Cox to figure it out. But
I was going to text Brad about it myself and see if he considered it. It's not like he's, but I just he might just not be very good. As much as you can do about that.
But you know, would he have started him? Would he have started him out in a spot like that?
Well, Oakland is problematic because it's either 6 furlongs or 2-turn mile.
Right.
So he's not likely to be quick enough to be a 6 furlong type horse. I mean, I don't know what the logistics at Oakland are, and I'm not saying that around the racetrack. They certainly do a fine job without me. But could they extend their shoot and make 7 furlong races? You know, they're running so much there now. Maybe they can
they can't do it physically. There's like a hill. I mean, it's a big hill.
No, I have no idea. But it does feel like that would really give more options. That's all. The race is very good. I don't mean that as a criticism, but it is. Situation where not having 7 furlong races can make it problematic for certain horses. That's all. I don't think they're supposed to reconfigure their racetrack because there's 3 horses a year that might prefer that 7 furlong. Like I said, they're doing just fine without it.
Well, we're gonna talk to Danny Caldwell about Rated R Superstar, who won the 5th season, as it happened. So
you're gonna talk to him now?
Yeah.
Well, good. Bye.
Thanks, Andy. Andy Serling, everybody. And waiting in the wings, Danny Caldwell to take the congratulations for the 9-year-old winning the 5th season. Danny, thanks for coming on, and congratulations to you and to Rico Villafranco and the whole team.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Steve. It is a team effort for sure, and Rated R is a special horse, and he's one of a kind in our mind.
It's got to be gratifying. You claim an 8-year-old, and you for $50,000. So obviously you thought he had plenty left, and he keeps turning up in big spots, and almost always gives you a big effort.
Yeah, the day I claimed him, I looked at the races at Turfway Park and, the Poly Track, and I just kind of threw those races out. And I go back before that at Churchill, and he had run in a grade 2 and a grade 3 at Prairie Meadows. And I'm thinking, this old horse looks like he's got something left. And I've been watching him run all these years. And my wife was sitting at the table, and I was going out to the car, and she said, well, if you don't claim him, you're going to wish you had him. And so I went down and dropped, and luckily I was the only one in on him that day. And,
unbelievable.
The rest is history.
Unbelievable. And you're active in so many different directions, and we've talked before after you've had the training title or owner titles that you've garnered, and you, you know it, you love the game and you love being involved. So to be rewarded with a horse like this that, you know, just keeps bringing it. He passed $1 million in earnings last year while you owned him, and, you know, it just great.
Yeah, I mean, we're blessed to have a horse like this. You know, I claim, you know, a lot of horses, and, you know, I run across stake horses occasionally. It's hard. It's getting harder each day. The claiming game's really stepped up, and, you know, now those 2 or 3 way shakes are 10 or 12 way shakes. So it's getting tougher to be in the claiming game, actually. And I'm very fortunate to have this horse with us. And, you know, Freddie does a great job getting him ready and taking care of him. And, you know, we don't train real hard on these older horses, and we keep them fresh for the race.
You're operating right now, you know, with the strings at Sam Houston and at Oaklawn, and talk a little bit about, you know, the you kind of reference it's challenging, and we talked yesterday. In fact, came up with John Ortiz, who ran second in the race with Mucho, mm-hmm. and yeah. You know, that was a big dollar claim that's panned out as well. You know, talk about how things have changed for you, and how you've adjusted you know, your approach.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Johnny, he's a great friend of mine, and we actually helped him get started, and he's doing a super yep. job as a trainer. I mean, I'm really happy for Johnny. His horse run a super race, and if they hadn't went so fast early, we probably wouldn't have got there. But the game is changing. I assume that, you know, there's just more people involved in the claiming game. You know, that don't mean that we still don't go to the sales and try to buy a few horses, but the game has gotten where there's more people looking for horses, more people looking for quality horses, and I don't know, maybe there's a shortage across the country. I'm beginning to think there may be, because you know, we see large shakes almost every day at Oaklawn Park, and now Houston's not quite as active in the claiming as of yet, but I expect it probably will pick up. But I had to split stables this year because of it. I mean, I got to be at two different tracks to be able to enter. When you got 40 head in training, it's kind of tough to get them in at one track. But I look forward for – I think this claiming game is going to get tougher before it gets easier, though.
Hmm. A couple of things, and in fact, I will ask you about the ones that you've got coming up tomorrow at – or Thursday at Sam Houston, Jenna's Gunrunner in the fifth, and Girl You Find in the seventh. But you know, one thing, Danny, when you get into the game like this, and you know, you send out, you know, big numbers of starters and evolve essentially into the operation that you've got. I'm just looking. Last year, 439 starts, 469 the year before, 493 in 2019, a high of 573 in 18. A lot of times we see a kind of a shift at a certain point where you start to seek out some higher quality stock or buy some stock. Are you at a point where, you know, you think about transitioning in that direction, or are you just maintaining what you're enjoying now?
Well, I mean, we always got a dream to have better horses. I mean, there's always that dream, and it's get tougher and tougher to own them and purchase them. And, you know, luckily I've been fortunate to claim some nice horses and going to be stakes winners. But I mean, that's always, you know, a possibility. But you know, right now it's just you know, I got my private trainers, and I kind of do the claiming, and I do the paying the bills, and do kind of running the show, and they do a great job at the track, so I don't have to be there. And you know, it's an operation that I've been very fortunate to. I've had good people around me, and which make me look good, and I'm content. But I always want better horses, and I always want a chance to win the derbies and, you know, stake races. But, you know, that opportunity may come along. It's just it's something you can't really push. I mean, there's a lot of wealthy people that's wanted to win those kind of races and couldn't win them. So.
Well, talk about what's coming up here. And tell me about Martin Villafranco as well, who's sending out Jenna's Gunrunner on Thursday.
Martin is Federico's son. It's his. He's been training and working under Freddie for several years, and I thought I'd give him an opportunity this year since I split up. I've also had Oscar Flores, who went back to Mexico to his homeland. He decided he wanted to take a little break, and so Martin stepped right in, and I'm very fortunate to have both of those guys to help Federico and, you know, kind of coach him up, and they're doing a great job for me.
The girl you find in the seventh, this is an interesting mare, and she's in for 50. This is a horse that's really improved under, you mentioned Oscar, and he had her, you know, all last fall, and she was getting incrementally better, and she's coming off a career best race.
Yeah, she really excelled once we got her, and you know, they mature. Horses just mature at certain ages,
sure.
You know, at different ages, and she's one of them. That, you know, she kind of had a tough race there at Remington. She runs six, but she got in a lot of trouble. And the next race, I knew she was fresh, and I stretched her out a little bit, and man, she ran her biggest number ever. And we've been looking for a race for her, and so now we're in the race at Sam Houston, and actually that could be a stake race. That's a very tough race, so we'll see how good she is down there for sure.
Well, the seventh, and this is a nice well matched bunch. We'll talk about that group actually, and the card with Nick Tamaro tomorrow. Basically, it's got about six different conditions. It's got 50 claimers. It's got allowances. It's got it's got everything. Non winners at two, other than, and there's a lot of things going on that brought that field together.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, if you look in there, there's several of those horses that have been in stake races and won stake races. So, to me, it's a stake race. I mean, basically, it's Sam Houston, for sure.
Well, this has got everybody that makes up the region. You got Calhoun, you got Broberg, you got Diodoro. It's a who's who,
names,
Danny.
That's a murderer's row right there. Let me tell you, those guys know how to train and know what they're doing. And it, like I said, we'll be happy if she runs well and gets a check.
I love it. J.R. Caldwell in there as well, and Scott Gellner. Yeah. It's not the racing. The race is going to be a good season. We're a couple of weeks in now on Sam Houston, and
it's a great meet. I mean, it's my first time to be down there.
Yeah,
we enjoy it. My crew down there enjoys it. I'm gonna have to make a trip down pretty quick and check things out. But I've heard nothing but great things about Sam Houston.
Well, you're back to Rated R Superstar for a second. Danny Caldwell with us, who has won his share of owner titles at Oaklawn. And one thing, Danny, that you've got multiple graded stake placements. You're still looking for that elusive graded stake win, and maybe it's Rated R that brings it home.
That would be sweet. It would be awesome if he could do that for us. Because we've been. Domain's Rap got close for us a couple times. You know, when he was a 9-year-old, it was running really well at a later age, and now Rated R. And so, you know, hopefully we can get that someday. I'd love for that to be Rated R, but, you know, we're asking a lot of a 9-year-old. But if he's feeling good and he's doing good, then he'll have the opportunity.
You know, you mentioned Domain's Rap, who I hadn't thought of in a while, but he's your biggest single earner, and it hasn't taken Rated R long. He's up to $389,000 in earnings wearing your silks, and Domain's earned $568,000. So Rated R Superstar is your second biggest earner.
Yes, he is, and what's unique about both of those horses is that I claimed them when they were 8 years old, and they done the best run at, well, Domain did at 9, and hopefully Rated R is going to at 9. So
unbelievable. I was there. He was second in the
Oaklawn handicap.
In the Oaklawn, I was going to say, that or the Razorback. I remember that.
Yeah, that. And then we got a wide trip in the Oaklawn. I mean, if we hadn't had to go so wide, the inside straight got the inside trip on us and beat us by about 2 lengths, if I remember right. And, we were rolling late, but we just couldn't get there because we'd had to go so wide. But we'd beat inside straight twice that year. So it's one of them deals where he turned the tables on us in the biggest race of the year.
Well, Danny, looking forward to be at Oaklawn for Rebel Week and then the HPPA convention the week after. So looking forward to seeing you, but wanted to reach out and get a congratulations in on Rated R Superstars win on Saturday in the fifth season.
Well, I appreciate it very much, and thanks for calling.
Danny Caldwell at Rated R Superstar. What a great story. Now four wins in 19 starts at Oaklawn, another 5 seconds, and the win on Saturday at 9. Unbelievable. And a big price, too. You got. I'm going to assume you bet a little on that, Andy.
I bet 20 across.
All right. I love it. There we go. Danny Caldwell to close out this Tuesday and get us off to the race day. And in addition to Danny, we had Andy Serling, of course, Glenn Kozak, Pat Kelly, and Michael Wright. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Back tomorrow, 9 o'clock. I mercifully am getting this tooth out at 3 o'clock, and I could not have gone another day with this thing tormenting me. Back with you in the morning. Good luck. Talk to you then.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.